Now, in the end, the government number is held. The eviction ban will lapse, but there's more action to come on the floor of the Dáil with a proposed bill and a no-confidence motion. And so the government will have to go to the well again to shore up its numbers, and at what price? Well, Craig Hughes, before we get to that question, what happened at Leaders' Questions today? It was pretty lively again.
Yeah, there was quite a visceral contribution from Independent TD Verona Murphy, which I think was the big takeaway contribution. She was quite critical of.
Well, hold on. We actually have a bit of that, so let's play it and we'll come back to you.
Nobody won anything yesterday. Nobody. Least of all, our reputations to solve problems. And I have such a headache from listening to rubbish. There is no solution among any of ye. All you want to do is bicker and blame somebody else, and all of the things are in your control. Well, I received a document from your Minister for Housing, Taoiseach, or Taoiseach, whichever you are, albeit that I'm a member of the regional group who put forward 8 very, I would say, constructive proposals. You can't implement the viability one. You just can't, because this document, instead of actually bringing down and lowering densities, which is what I have asked for 3 years be done, it increases densities. And it's time we all stopped the BS. I won't say it now, Ciarán Corla, but it's a time when we should be pulling together, because if I have one homeless child in Wexford, one child that isn't accommodated, I'll be bringing it here and it'll be sitting in the Ciarán Corla's lap.
Visceral, Craig, as you say.
Yeah, and quite emotive. I don't think anyone can doubt Verona's sincerity in this issue. And I spoke to her afterwards, and she said quite categorically that she won't be able to. She's not going back to the government next week, looking for anything to support them on the confidence motion. She said quite simply, "I can't support them." The issues she was raising was around house densities, and she said that, you know, the government's plans are to have higher densities, and in the cities that makes sense. Okay, we've higher density buildings, apartments make sense, but she says in her constituencies, they're not getting built for that reason, and there needs to be allowances to allow a 2-bed house to be built where they perhaps previously would have wanted a 2-bed apartment. And I think the response back from the minister just kind of irked her in that they said they would do that, and the response was just completely at odds with what they'd committed to do. So the government has to go back now next week. TDs who voted in favour of the government motion last night said that their vote was purely on that motion. There'll be a whole new round of talks to get their support on the Sinn Féin bill and the confidence motion next week. So the government has now got into this exhaustive process where they have to curry favour with the independents on a weekly basis for the foreseeable at the moment.
And you mentioned the confidence motion coming from the Labour Party and the Sinn Féin bill. What's in the Sinn Féin bill?
Yeah, so the Sinn Féin bill, I guess to point out to people, this is more significant than what we saw this week, because the motion this week wasn't legally binding. The government could have lost that and nothing would have happened. The Sinn Féin bill will seek to, in legislation, extend the eviction ban until January. If that was to pass, which it doesn't look like it will come close to, that would be legally binding. And even more significant, the confidence motion in the government, if they lost that, that would trigger an election. So it's quite high stakes. But however, given the strength shown by the government by with a majority of 15 last night, I don't think they're concerned just yet.
Right, but a bit of horse trading to be done to shore up support numbers been in advance of those being introduced.
Without doubt, and we saw the first cracks emerging in the coalition as a result of that. I mean, tonight you have junior ministers who have their noses bent out of joint over the inclusion of the change to the Fair Deal scheme. So at the moment, under Fair Deal, you can rent out a property, 60% of income is tax-free, the other 40% is taxable. Under the deal struck to pass the motion last night, that is going to change to 100%. That caught Minister of State Responsibility for Older People, Mary Butler, by shock. I think she first learned about it when a journalist contacted her, as opposed to her line minister. She sought a meeting with the Minister for Housing on it today. It's now pushed back till tomorrow. And so you had the government moving quite rapidly to make this deal happen, but seemed to overlook their junior candidates within government who look after these issues directly.
Right. And she vented some of her grievances with our colleagues on the news at one earlier. Malcolm Noonan, to you first. Let's go back to basics. We're nearly a good 3 weeks on from the government announcement that the eviction ban was to be allowed to lapse. And your colleague, Green Party colleague Pippa Hackett, told Morning Ireland this morning that this decision was taken on foot of advice. What specific advice, what specific report, what specific modelling informed this decision?
Well, it was certainly a decision that government didn't come to lightly, and I think the general advice that government had been getting was that first of all, it wasn't having the desired impact. There were still issues around homelessness, and there were still issues that the eviction ban wasn't having the effect that it would have had previously. It was only a temporary ban, and that was well documented and well known by everybody. And then there was a concern there within government that it was going to have another impact of small landlords leaving the market.
Right.
And that was the general concern that government had in relation to
this. You said it wasn't an easy decision to make, and you say there was a concern there, but where was the causal link established between the eviction ban and the decision for landlords who'd been leaving long before it was introduced, who'd been leaving the market before it was introduced? Where was that causal link established? What modelling, what report, what advice established that causal link?
Yeah, again, I'm not myself sure exactly what that link was, but I do, you know, we were aware that certainly landlords were leaving the market, and given the fact that the ban was put in for a defined period, the concern was that more small landlords would leave the market based on a continued uncertainty around this.
Okay, well, we have figures on people who've left the market. Sherry Fitzgerald, Managing Director Marion Finnegan, said 80,000 net rentals were lost over 10 years. So 150,000 people left, around 70,000 people entered, 80,000 of a net loss. But the main reasons she cited are taxation and onerous regulation. At no point, and this is in a piece written in a newspaper, a report written by Sherry Fitzgerald, and subsequent interviews, was the eviction ban at the top of the list for the reasons that people were exiting the market. So where was the causal link established to inform the government decision?
Well, the regulations are there to protect renters and to improve standards across the private rental accommodation sector. And that's an essential part to ensure that accommodation is up to a fit standard for people to rent. In terms of the other elements around the ban, I think the critical thing was the government had a concern that this was going to lead to further people.
I know, but it's just you can appreciate that 3 weeks on, the government had a concern. Did the government have evidence of a causal link? Because if Marion Finnegan is talking about the type of regulation which you say is there to protect tenants, there's a direct causal link between that and people leaving the rental market. I mean, people who are, the eviction ban was also there for the protection of tenants, and yet you chose to remove that. And it's the why of it that people would be interested in.
Well, as I said, it was always a temporary ban. You know, Sinn Féin and others always had proposed an extension of that ban. But I think there was advice there from the AG as well in relation to the potential for a legal challenge to it, because it was a defined period. So again, government acted that there was a potential there for it to have unintended consequences or consequences that could actually make the situation worse.
But as far as you know, and you're in the Department of Housing, there was no specific document, report, evidence, modelling, figures that established a causal link between the eviction ban and landlords exiting the market.
Again, that's something that I'm not aware of, and it was a government decision to move ahead with the ban within the defined period.
And if you're in the Department of Housing, that suggests there is no such evidence.
What we were working with was the AG's advice, and
I know, but the AG, to be clear, the AG's advice was the legality of leaving in place or removing the eviction ban. That's a separate issue.
Sure.
To the evidence as to why you believed as a government that landlords were leaving the market because of the eviction ban.
Yes, and again, we were conscious, and government was conscious, that if we extended out the ban and we had further small landlords leaving the market, that was going to have a add to the problem or exacerbate the problem. And that's why the decision was made to go ahead with it. As I said, it wasn't an easy decision, and we have put in a lot of measures in tandem with that to ensure that we protect renters, and we put in measures to support people who want to purchase tenant in situ, other schemes to ensure that we can support people who are in vulnerable situations.
Right. Padraig Tobin.
Yeah, so it's an evidence-free decision. So in other words, we don't have any evidence that we can point to which shows a direct causal link between the eviction ban and potentially large numbers leaving the market. And in actual fact, if, you know, keeping landlords were in place, maybe the government would have actually front-loaded a taxation change which would incentivize long-term leases to people so that they could stay between 5 and 10 years there. But that's obviously not on the government agenda, as far as I can see. If you know, keeping rents in long-term rents, you would actually do something with the short-term rents. It's 22,000 houses on Airbnb tonight, and it's 1,200 houses in long-term rents tonight. So, you know, if keeping houses in long-term rents was the objective, there were two levers that would actually pull and make an actual difference, rather than this case. What struck me about last night was, you know, the kind of the cavalier, you know, the atmosphere that was in the Dáil, like the amount of laughing and joking that was in the Dáil during that vote yesterday was incredible. Given that 400 people have died in homelessness in Dublin in the last 5 years, and that's just Dublin, that we know that homelessness is a life and death issue. In my own county, there is 127 eviction notices. There are 31 houses to rent. There are zero emergency beds in the local authority. Those figures don't add up. A chunk of those families will have to go into a box room. They'll have to couch surf. Some will have to go to tents, and some will be queuing up in Garda stations as a result of that vote yesterday.
All right. Bree Smith.
Well, I find Malcolm's answer to you kind of shocking, really, and I've great respect for Malcolm on some levels, but this idea that I'm in the housing department, but I've seen no evidence to back up what I've just said, which is that landlords were leaving because of the eviction ban, is quite an extraordinary response to you. And you see, when you think back on the lead up to this eviction ban, landlords leaving was one excuse that was wheeled out with no evidence consistently, and the other was people coming back from Dubai. For some reason, they were all coming back from Dubai and they all wanted to move into the houses. That was repeatedly said to us time and time again. But the problem, I think, in the sort of structural rental market that we have in Ireland is that most tenancies are for an undefined period. And that means that you could be there for years and years and years, but you could be also told next week you're gone and here's your notice. And that's what's been happening. Instead of having a tenancy for 15 or 20 years so that you know, I'm in this gap for 15 years, I can rear my kids, they can go to the local school and we're going to be settled here, or 20 years or whatever it is. And therefore, the landlord market or the rental market is very precarious for the renters, and yet we're pushing more and more people into renting. So there needs to be something more permanently done to create a rental market that is mirrors what happens in most European countries, that people have fixity of tenure, as was argued for during the Land League all those decades ago, hundreds of years ago.
So there's no such thing as a no-fault eviction?
When there was no such thing as a no-fault eviction. You see, if you pay your rent and you're not wrecking the place and you're not selling drugs from the front door and causing antisocial issues, why should you be evicted? Other than somebody wants to move back in, but then you've got this open-ended tenancy agreement, because all of the notices to quit that come to us with the tenancy agreement are for an indefinite duration. And that creates a real problem. Now, this is not going to be fixed by what's just happened. It is certainly not going to be fixed. It is just going to get absolutely chaotic, dangerous, sad, brutal and disgraceful in terms of Irish society, throwing people and particularly children out onto the streets, into tents, into the back of cars. And as Padraig says, in Garda stations, if they appear at Garda stations, the first person to come to them will be Tuzla. And you'll have Tuzla having to take children from their parents if that happens. So it's a very, very nasty situation. And it's disgraceful what's just been done.
The numbers on that, Malcolm Noonan, as well, about the number of people who will end up homeless as a result of this. What's the plan? What numbers are you planning on, and what contingency accommodation has been put in place, because we've heard people can go to their local authorities. I think it's 17 local authorities say they have no emergency accommodation. Five say their space for emergency accommodation is challenging. For this to happen now, entering the tourist season, shortage of hotel rooms, difficulty accommodating people seeking international protection, this time of the year, right now, where are people supposed to go when they are evicted in the coming months?
Just to go back to the point that Breed made first in relation to the security of tenure and the rental market in general, there is a comprehensive review underway of the private rental sector in Ireland. That report is due quite shortly. And again, I think that's going to be quite useful in forming the additional protections that are already in place, and to ensure that we have a market that's fit for tenants, but also for landlords as well. And just in relation to the issue of what might happen in the next number of weeks, there are additional measures and funding being put in to local authorities to support people who are at risk of homelessness or could be entering
homelessness. They've nowhere to put them, Malcolm.
And I mean, the other aspect, you know, the schemes that have been announced, the tenant in situ scheme, the cost rental tenant purchase schemes, the first refusal on buying, all of these are being put in place to try and ensure that across the board and across all local authorities, there is an opportunity there for both social tenants and other people who are not under in receipt of
all right. Just
that they can be part of purchasing their own home.
Okay, but we have figures out that were compiled for Gamma on house prices in Dublin, Cork, Kildare and Wicklow, places where there are pinch points, and the prices are beyond reach for a lot of people, like on people on incomes. It says the analysis was found that the median price of all private residential sales across the country between 2019 and 2021 was £255,500. It's gone up since then, more than the median household could afford. So they've calculated what the shortfall is in people's incomes. 36,000 in Cork, 115,000 in Dublin City, 216,500 in Dunleary Rathdown, 41,500 in Galway City, 48,000 in South Dublin, 79,500 in Wicklow. And these are shortfalls that are calculated on the basis of people being able to pay a deposit. If people have been paying exorbitant rents for quite a period of time, it's unlikely they'll even have a deposit. Mm. So how does first refusal to buy a property at the market rate help anyone?
Well, I mean, under the first refusal scheme, the applicants can apply for the state-backed shared equity scheme. So there, again, what we're trying to do is put in a range of measures to support families and people to purchase. And I think that's an important part. The second and critical thing, and the challenge that is facing all of this, is around supply. And I think 2022, we saw the figures for housing delivery generally. We saw the last quarter of 2022 in terms of social housing delivery alone was record numbers up on previous years. So I think we're certainly, the supply side of it between last year and this year is moving in the right direction. And that's critically important to all of this.
What Malcolm's refusing to talk about is that the eviction ban will be lifted on the 1st of April. And they've done this despite all of this evidence being provided from various TDs, from various organisations, from advocacy groups, Focus, Peter McVeary Trust, all begging them, don't do this because you have not put in place the protection for people not to go into homelessness. It's going to happen, yeah. And be it on your heads. But that's not good enough for the people who are really terrified and facing the possibility of ending up in a tent with their children.
Craig Hughes.
Yeah, I think worryingly on the supply side of things, and you're referencing Sherry Fitzgerald, they had a market report out earlier this year where they predicted that the overall output would not exceed what it was last year. Mm. And the similarly worrying outlook for the year afterwards. I asked the Taoiseach about this in Washington last week. He said that he believes that they might exceed it if you suddenly take into consideration student accommodation and voids that were brought back into use. So the sad thing was, while there was a big leap last year from 20,000 to 30,000, we're looking at best a stagnation in these years, and that's far below what we need to do to meet demand.
Malcolm, I just want to ask about the timing of this, because it seems to have caught people by surprise. It seems to have caught even the government itself by surprise, because you said there's a report due on the rental sector. There are a number of measures proposed by the government in its counter-motion, the legislation for which has yet to be put in place. There are 12,000 Airbnb properties out there. There's a decision awaited from the European Commission as to when that might be dealt with. The timing of the decision at a time when there are other policies that could have been given the time to be implemented seems strange. Could you explain it?
Well, many of the measures that we're talking about will be put in place for ahead of April 1st. So I do think separately, the issue around the Airbnbs and awaiting that decision, I think, is going to be important. And again, going back to the point that Craig made in terms of supply, the supply is being delivered in terms of, we saw the 2022 figures, and the figures for social housing delivery for 2023 are looking positive. And there was never a good time to do this. And I think the critical thing was there was a
Why not pick there. A later bad time then?
Well, the concern was there that we were going to lose more small landlords from the market.
But
that was the concern.
Based on a feeling and a concern rather than on evidence.
It was advice that was given within the department. Again, that was Minister O'Brien would have received that advice and given that advice to government. So I think based on that, this decision was made to lift the ban as was scheduled for.
The advice that this is based on came from within the Department of Housing, delivered to the Minister of Housing. It comes from within the department. It doesn't come from an external report or an external study or anything else.
Yes, that's my understanding of it. Yes.
See, I actually think there's an ideological thing, an ideological issue at play here. You know, we have to look at Fine Gael and their influence on government. Fine Gael do not like to intervene or interfere with the market. That's their instinct. They have a laissez-faire attitude, a hands-off.
Well, you've just heard from Malcolm Noonan, Patrick, that this originated from within the Department of Housing and was given to a Fianna Fáil minister. I mean, it doesn't seem to have a Fine Gael hand on it.
Well, I think Fianna Fáil don't necessarily have an ideological compass at all, to be honest. I think in many ways, and they can be pushed in any direction. I think if the strongest ideological compass at the moment in government is Fine Gael, for the wrong direction, unfortunately, in this. I think the Greens have run up the white flag on this, and worse than that, the actual only Green TD that actually votes on it gets a 15-month suspension as a result.
You put down an amendment to the government. You were hoping to keep people who are serious, or was it terminally ill, in the accommodation give them an exemption from the lifting of the... If that had been included, would you have supported the government counter-motion?
My job was to make the process better if I could, and if it was to mean that we would have four groups of people protected, I would have done my best to achieve that. It would have been better that people who are terminally ill, who are pensioners, who have very young families, who have disabilities.
So under those circumstances, you would have voted with the government, would you?
I would have preferred to see that than actually what happened. There's no doubt about that.
All right, but I mean, just to be clear about it, if that provision had been put in the bill or in the government's counter-motion, if you had secured that, would you have voted with them?
Practically, I would have had to, because it would have been a better situation than we have now. It's as simple as that. When you're a TD like myself, you're not going to get the objectives all the time that you want. So what you'll try to do is push the government in the right direction.
Right.
And it would have been a better situation.
And did you reach out to them? What were you told by government?
Well, I spoke to government TDs on it, and the government TDs I spoke to weren't interested, was the truth of it. They didn't take that particular amendment seriously in many ways, I felt. And, you know, these are people who will suffer the most. These are cohorts of people who will suffer the most under the government's plan. And I think the humane response from the government would have been to ring fence those individuals in terms of the potential dangers that they face.
Malcolm Noonan, do you want to answer that wasn't taken on board?
Well, at local authority level, vulnerable families and people in vulnerable situations like that are prioritised at local individual local authorities.
But if they've no emergency beds, how are they prioritised?
That's always been the case. But and I think emergency measures put in local authorities would absolutely factor in people who are in very difficult or ill health situations.
One voice at a time, Breed Smith.
The amount of people who have priority on medical grounds is massive, you know, compared to what it used to be, because there are lots of reasons why people get it, particularly if they have children who are sick. I have a man who has priority on medical grounds who's just started his chemo last week. And the same day he started the chemo, he got eviction notice. And that eviction notice will transpire by the end of April. And he'd be in the middle of his chemo. The council have told me they've nowhere for him. Now, he's entitled to go into what they call older persons accommodation, but they have nowhere for him. He will more than likely end up in a hostel if there's a space for him, because the hotel rooms are being kept for families, if there are any. We're coming into the summer. The hotels are saying, no, we want to go back into the tourist trade, and they're pulling the rooms. So I know what you're saying should work, but it doesn't work like that. That is not in reality what is happening. There are no places for these people to go.
The real frustration is you can't prioritise zero beds. And if a local authority, I put in a question to Meath County Council, they said they have zero beds. The big frustration, if you were going to make a decision like this, you could have twinned it with actual, a real in-situ plan, a funding mechanism where you would actually, that would be in place while you're okay. transitioning into this new phase. And you know, there's like, my frustration is in terms of empty homes. We have 165,000 empty homes, and the taxation for vacant properties is still not in place in many local authorities.
I want to go to a few listeners here. Somebody who is a landlord texting in on 51551. Hi, I'm a landlord with four properties. I had started planning to sell all my properties if the eviction ban remained. I'm tired of hearing politicians say the ban did not influence landlords. The tax on profits from letting properties is unfair and not worth the constant hassle that landlords undergo. Somebody else texting in saying the reason some landlords are leaving the market is because we're 5 seconds away from a global financial crash. That's the estimation of this texter anyway. They want to sell while the bubble is at its most inflated. And yeah, we'll come back to a few more of those texts. Well, I want to get to the consequences for your party, Malcolm Noonan, and Nessa Horrigan didn't vote with the government. She's been expelled for 15 months now. She's no longer chair of a committee. Let's just hear from a couple of your councillors who are with our colleagues on Drive Time. We're going to hear from Liam Quaid, who's a county councillor in Cork, and Oisin O'Connor, who's from Dunleary at Down County Council.
This is a very unpopular decision among the members. There are people who are generally very supportive of our parliamentary party who are now questioning their decision making.
Do you think there should be a new leader or leadership team then within the Green Party, Liam?
Well, I think the leadership issue was settled in 2020, but I do think there is an unease among many of our members and representatives about what this action says more generally.
When decisions like this happen that are so severe in terms of sanctions of somebody on the team, it almost always comes from the leader, and it's not a very popular decision among the members. I would suspect that the decision last night wasn't a unanimous one.
Not a unanimous decision, Malcolm Noonan.
The decision was reached by the parliamentary party.
Unanimously?
And the decision was made collectively by the parliamentary party. I think that's critically important.
Right.
And
one would suspect if it was unanimous, you'd be able to say yes to that.
Well, these are the matters for a parliamentary party. And just to say, it wasn't a decision we came to lightly. Nessa has been a valued member of our party and our parliamentary party. She's done really, really good work in committee and in her work around gender issues.
It was a decision that was cheered on by your coalition partners. There was Pascal Donoghue said there must be consequences for it. James Lawless, who was sitting here the other night on Tuesday, said the last time she was suspended from the party, which included a recess in the Dáil, was a risible punishment.
I'm not aware of that. I mean, this was a matter for our party, our parliamentary party, to deal with. We have a whip system and it's in place. I mean, Patter knows he was on the receiving end of it as well. So I think, you know...
It's too tight in this country, to be honest. We need to have TDs who can think for themselves as well.
I mean, I think the issue from our perspective is that we had to deal with it in a manner that we felt was fair and that was commensurate with the action that was taken.
But now the government programme is more dependent on regional independents who may not be committed to the climate agenda as the TD you've just lost is.
Well, as I said, I think the whip system exists for a reason. We're in government. We have a lot, and the Greens have an awful lot. We've achieved a lot. We have a lot that we still need to continue to do around climate, around nature, around lots of issues that are very important to us while we're in government. And in that regard, I think we have to ensure that there is a level of discipline within the parliamentary party and that we adhere to that and we work collectively and collegiately. So I think it was, as I said, it wasn't an easy decision to come to, but it was something that we had to do, given what the way that Nessa decided to vote.
Great cues.
My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, Malcolm, that it didn't require a vote last night, so no one seemed to raise any objections to that level of punishment, the severity of it. I think when you look back at the last suspension that Nasa and Patrick Ostler got for 6 months, it was seen as being very lenient. She got to hold on to her her committee chair, which has been taken off her in this instance. But I think she's been very unfortunate in the constituency where she is, a constituency where had Sinn Féin, Box, Leverett, they would have had a second seat in there. So she was always going to be targeted on votes from the very start. And people were even identifying that very early on in this Dáil term. I think it'll be interesting to look at now, next week, if she doesn't vote confidence in the government, because I was talking to one of Malcolm's colleagues earlier today, when she applies to be readmitted to the party after 15 months, it'll require a two-thirds majority to allow her back in. And if she votes, doesn't vote confidence in the government, I'm sure that'll be something that'll weigh heavy in the minds of those she's asking to readmit her.
I don't understand your first point, Craig, because Patrick Costello's in a constituency, my constituency, which Sinn Féin could have got two TDs in and probably will in the next election. And he voted with the government. But he voted with the government. But he has no hope in hell of getting back in the next time because of that. So NASA at least has held her head high and done the right thing. But Patrick is sunk now because I reckon he's sunk, and people are saying it to me all day long. What the hell did he do that for? Nobody's going to respect him anymore.
Do you think that vote last night is going to save NASA's political career?
I'm not saying it's certainly sunk Patrick's. So I don't understand the point you're making about the question of the constituencies in and the fact that Sinn Féin could have had two seats. They probably could have had two seats in most constituencies.
Sure, well, she was always going to be targeted more for there on the housing issue because that was a bit more acute. And the other thing is now if when she's outside of the fold, she's much more unlikely to be sitting on panels like this if she was to become as opposed to an outspoken member of a government party.
Malcolm, there were consequences for other parties as well. Mary Butler, the interviews that Craig Hughes mentioned at the top, her signalling her discontent with the level of consultation from Dara O'Brien, the housing minister. That was one of her complaints. And the other issue was there is a report on the issue around people who are in the Fair Deal scheme whose properties might be available for rent. There's a report due within the department on that, I think by the end of next month, is it?
I think so, yeah. And
why couldn't the outcome of that been waived? Because it looks like the regional independent group got a policy decision over the line, again, before the evidence that in a report you had commissioned was presented to the department.
I don't think so. I think Minister O'Brien had flagged that they were going to move from the 60% to the 100% quite a number of weeks ago in the Dáil. I'll have to double check that, but I think it had been flagged for quite a while.
Mary Butler does not feel she was consulted on this, and when she was asked about assertions that she had been consulted, she was unequivocal that she had not been consulted on this, had not got a heads up.
Okay, and I'm aware Age Action raised concerns about it today as well. I think it is important, you know, in terms of the issue of elder abuse is financial abuse is a serious one, and I do think those safeguards. I think Minister Donnelly was president of the cabinet when that decision was made, so I do think it's important that those safeguards are in place. But I'm pretty sure that this had been flagged for quite some time, that government was going to move from the 60% to the 100%.
I mean, another issue that this raises is the whole question of what we intend to do coming out of COVID and having had a recommendation from the COVID committee that we should attempt to keep people in their own homes as long as possible and provide them the health needs that they require, i.e. nurses and visitors, home help and carers coming to see them. And that one of the big failings for us as a state was that lack of, you know, focus on people whose needs could be met at home rather than putting them into closed settings that were actually dangerous for them.
With all due respect,
and if we move to this, we're going to move away from that more.
Yeah,
and more.
I think with all due respect, Minister Butler has secured significant funding for home care and home care supports, I think, and that is certainly her determination to ensure that.
I think the concern around this is a different one, that people might fall foul of frankly, maltreatment, abuse by family members who are pushing them into nursing home settings to rent out their home and keep the income. That's the concern, not only from Mary Butler, but also from advocacy groups too.
Yeah, I'm sure those issues can be resolved. As I said, noting the concerns from Age Action and Minister Butler, I think it's critically important that those safeguards are in place. Minister Donnelly and Minister O'Brien will absolutely work together to ensure that.
Right. Padraig Tobin, on this particular issue, the giving people 100% of the income from renting out a Fair Deal loan, would you support it?
I think I would support it. I think the reason being is because one of the biggest frustrations has been vacant properties in this country while we have a housing crisis. There are 4,500 vacant properties in County Meath, and there are 3,500 people on the housing waiting list. And, you know, the idea that we have vacancy in properties at a time of great housing need is similar to exporting food during the famine. It just does not make sense. And we have to get those houses back into use. And, you know, I would have the same concerns. And I do agree that elder abuse is a threat. And, you know, unfortunately, when there's wills and there's property and there's money involved, there can be often difficulties. We do need to make sure we have a fail-safe protection in those terms. But we do need to see, can we get houses back into use?
We don't have the ability for any outside authority to go in and see if older people are, for example, being coerced, being abused, being put under pressure. But there's no statutory basis for the vulnerable adults system that would be needed for inspections to be carried out in the same way that TUSLA inspects child safety concerns.
Yeah, and again, I'm not sure what the mechanism would be, or the in particularly this, as given that this.
And in fairness, this isn't that specific issue isn't something that was coming up for discussion this evening. We're back with more after this.
The Late Debate with Cullum O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.